Welcome back to the Esports Central Podcast. This is episode number 57. In this episode, we really kicked out all the non-Dora people. Garen Lily, that Overwatch chick, gone. Glenn, that fucking League of Legends, gone. It's just myself, Prophecy, and special guest today, Snare. I heard you kind of like Dora, Mr. Sean.
It's alright. It's okay. You know, it's alright. It's a decent game, you know. Every now and then, in between playing Underlord Stacks, you can fit in one random game of Dota, you know. Just a child's play game.
Alright. Alright, I can respect that. Well, this episode, I teased it last week that we might do a TI special. This episode, we're really doing it. Like, this episode, we're talking about TI only. If you don't like Dota, switch off this fucking podcast now and reevaluate your life. That's all I'm saying. Prophecy, how are you doing tonight?
Good, thanks. I mean, if you want a little bit of a bonus, you can also remember that Glenn was, he's a massive fan of Team Liquid as well.
Ooh. I actually have photo evidence that Glenn was watching TI. And he did hint that he enjoys it, but in a very millennial way, so I can't make that reach. But he was caught watching Dora. Evidence of it.
He watched the first game, man. When Team Liquid won, and then he had to go. So, I mean, we clearly know who's at fault for Team Liquid getting utterly curb stomped in the last three.
Well, that's going to be our first point of debate today. Liquid did not win that first game. I'm going to put it out there. I think OG straight up threw that game. But I could say Liquid threw it before that then as well. But
I was going to say, actually, no. I watched that game again last night because I went back. And I'm doing my great tradition of rewatching the TI main event. Starting from finals backwards. And I rewatched it and I was like, OG threw, but Liquid threw first. Liquid threw could have won that game 10 minutes before they were actually in the base.
I'm probably going to say something a little bit controversial, but I didn't actually enjoy the final. Like, for me, the final wasn't actually
it was
a top class series. It was literally just one team winning and then the other team just curb stomping them in the next three. It was just like, kind of boring, to be honest. Like, once you saw how, like, the laning stages went and just, like, it was, like, the laning stage and then the next 5 minutes and you were just like, yeah, Liquid's not going to win this game. There's not much they can do about it.
Like, I mean, obviously, when Liquid won TI7, it was a 3-0, not a 3-1, but I still think this was the most curb stomp final I've ever seen. Even the fucking Vici
Those games were curb stomps. They were just, like, it was just the nature of the meta. It was just, like, they rolled over you and
exactly.
So.
The fucking TI4 was that dumbass push meta, so you just have Pugna and you walk down 10 towers in 15 minutes and you win. Like, it wasn't really VG's fault for getting smashed, it was just the way the game worked, right? But this was just
outclassed in every arena. Like, it didn't feel like it was close, even at game one. So check this out, guys, something you're going to laugh about. I was watching game one, right? Then, you know when they were at that moment where Thompson was trying to creep skip at mid, right? And he was attacking onto their Rax, try to force them away from pushing Rax mid and force them away from tier 4 tower in the mid lane. And then Thompson started attack cancelling on the Rax. Because I think he knew. He was like, guys, that's fine, actually. Even if we lose this game, we've got the series. Don't stress. And that's just like, really, imagine in a TI finals being so disrespectful. You're like, I know we've got the next game. We don't have to worry about this one. You know, Ana could have bought back. I mean, we need Ravage to maybe win the fight. If I buy back, I might die. Whatever, we'll go next game.
Ana was saving buyback for the next game there.
The next game, dude. Like, honestly, when you watch the replays again, and you see the teams walking out of the booths, right? You can tell Liquid knows they lost the game, and OG knows they basically won the game. And everyone's like, all right, guys, it's fine. It's cool.
I mean, it genuinely just did feel like the only team that could beat OG was LGD. And LGD had the thing of, like, if they lose a game, they just, like, went on hard tilt and just got wrecked. Like, if you saw them, like, they win the first game against OG, then they get absolutely dumpstered in game two. And then game three, just, like, just never looked like they were going to win that game against OG in the third game. Similar things happened when they dropped down into the loser bracket against Liquid. Like, they just never looked like, as soon as they lost a game, you just had this feeling like they couldn't recover it.
It's actually interesting that you bring this up, because I was talking to Kamil about this the other day, where it's like, every time I see LGD is probably the worst team to lose. They're the best team to beat you 2-0, but if they lose a single game, there's no way they win a series. They just tilt so hard, their drafting gets worse, they play so nervously, they just do weird things around the map. Mm-hmm. And it's like, guys, we know you're better than this. And it actually happens, it's actually weird how often it happens, where like, they'll ruffle stomp you game one, and then lose game two and look like a tier two team game three.
It's not even that they're like bad in the clutch. You know, like, I mean, what that was, I think it was the first game against OG when they like got that crazy ass comeback and then beat them. So like, you look at that and you're like, okay, well, I mean, they're not bad in the clutch. It's just like, if they lose a game, they just like go on hard tilts and then just get like wrecked for the next two games. It was just like so disappointing.
Why do you know? Later on in the script, we actually, I have two topics that actually touch on that fact. But I think I'll put a disclaimer out there. So leading into the first topic, you know that it isn't too biased me saying this. But myself and Snare here are massive LGD fans. Last year, I straight up said OG fluked the fucking TI. That was LGD's TI, 100%, but they didn't win it. This year, though, I think it's a bit different. Upper bracket game, we saw LGD bit shaky there, but I actually believe after, and this is my first topic of the evening for this podcast, is that I think OG is the greatest Dota team of all time after this. Just let me explain. This is the community's reaction. Plenty of members are saying this, right? And I actually kind of agree. Last year, again, I claimed it as a fluke TI. This year, they look significantly better than the rest. I think this year, as an LGD fan, I think they deserve second still, but I don't think they were beating OG. It was such a dominant performance. Yeah.
No, I'd agree that I don't think LGD looked like... I mean, they looked like they could win TI until they played OG in the upper bracket final. Like, when I saw how they lost those games, I was like, yeah, they're pretty much done. Like, even if they make it back to the final, like, I just don't see them winning. But, like,
yeah,
I mean, OG, best team of all time, please. Mm-mm. GTFO, bro. The fuck out of here.
How about this, Camille, right? Here's a defensible statement. You can say that when it comes to extremely high-pressure tournaments and those high-pressure situations, that OG displays the best team mentality and team psychology and ability to weather that pressure of all time. But to say that the best team, come on, bro.
No, like, I mean, I'll give you this. They're the best team at TI of all time. Like that, like I'm not like that.
Unequivocally.
I'm happy to like argue that point and you know give you that point, but like, there's no way they're the best team of all time. Sorry. Like, I mean, how many tournaments have they won that aren't called TI?
I mean, okay, all right. I'm with you guys, right?
Actually, all right. Hold on. Let's do this. Right. Camille, what's the top five, bro? If OG's number one, right? All right. Cool.
So let me give some method to the madness here, right? I've done a whole segment on this podcast claiming that I think Virtus Pro is the greatest team of all time. This year, when Secret was smashing the whole year, that insane 70% win rate or whatever, I still said I think VP in their prime, which lasted 2 to 3 years, mind you, were a better team. Because for 3 years, outside of TI, they dominated the space, right? They just won everything. They were the same roster, more or less, just one player swapped out in between those years. And they just fucking smashed everybody. No. They were winning majors.
Let's set some limits here, right? What do we what constitutes a team?
I think core. I think core members, at least three people, the same.
Okay, so like the same core, the best core of all time. Is that what the agreement is? Okay.
Right.
Sorry, so I just need to confirm that, because otherwise you can just say, well, I mean, Liquid's made how many? You know, they've made two TI finals and Na'Vi back, and you know, it's like, so okay. Yeah. Three members minimum have to be the same.
I think also I need to put a disclaimer here that I'm only talking about post, like, TI4 and after that, because I think the game was too different in the TI3 era. The era was different, and I think Alliance and Na'Vi have their own special place in the Hall of Fame in that regard, right? We can agree on that, boys.
Yeah,
sweet.
I just want to know what the, like, what, you know, like, let's just set the boundaries, because otherwise it's like we start talking about different things.
All right, fair enough, right? So here's where I get this logic from. So everybody knows I'm a massive VP fan, I'm a massive LGD fan, and I, again, on a podcast, on this Esports Central podcast, I argued that Virtus Pro are the greatest Dota team of all time from consistent results. But I did put the caveat that until they win a TI, they can't actually officially stake that claim. But now this OG team, I think, can. There's two reasons for that. I think TI is the, like, it's the epitome of Dota, right? It's the equivalent of the World Cup in football in Dota. And I also, when they're the only team to have won it twice and the only team to have won it back to back, right? That's one. But I also think, in terms of consistency, right, OG have done fuck all this year. They've done nothing, they've won jack shit. Last year they also did nothing. What, before Flying S4 left, they did nothing, and then they ended up winning TI. They were literally the Glico worst team coming into TI. But roll back the clock a little, 2016.
Already 15, 16, OG was hot, dude.
Yeah. OG were literally won the four Valve majors in a row. I think out of the Valve official majors, they won four out of the five. The only one they didn't win was the one where Team Secret actually won.
So, Shanghai Major.
Yeah. Obviously, there was two different rosters that won. The one with Miracle and Moon Meander. They won two or three, I believe, with that. And then they won two after that with, obviously, Topson wasn't there. It was Ana. Ana, Jirax, S4, Fly, and am I missing a player there?
No-Tail.
And No-Tail, yes, No-Tail. So I think the base core of the team is quite similar, not the exact same team, but that team did have some major achievements in those times. So I think in that regard, I do see that this team makes a good claim for greatest team of all time.
Greatest core, yeah. Like, I don't know if I'd say three players as a team, especially because how important was Topson last year to the win at TI? That's the kind of, you know, like that's the problem. Like, cores, yeah, certainly. I'm like happy to give the OG core the best of all time, but like the nature of the beast is that like certain players are, you know, it's like take Sumail out of the EG team that won TI. Like, do they necessarily win? Take PPD out of that team. Like, it's the same, you know, like if you just take out those two players, yeah, you still got like the same core three, but like those players are so critical to that win that like I think it massively changes how you'd read that team. So for me, like, I would say the best team has to be the same five-man lineup. And in that case, I can't, like, OG certainly has a case. I'm not saying that, like, they're absolutely not, it's not possible for them to be. It certainly is. But I think that only winning two tournaments doesn't make you the best, even if those tournaments are the, you know, the biggest tournaments of all time. Like, I'm sorry. Like, you need to do more than win two tournaments.
All right. That's a fair argument. Stay with you.
Because, you know, like, you know, it's that same thing as like me saying newbie in 2014, right? They won TI. Does that make them the best team of the year?
Definitely not. I agree with you there.
So, like, that's the whole point. You know, it's like, that's basically what OG's done. They've won TI twice and then been not garbage, but not the best team for the rest of the year. So, like, being great for, you know, it's like, I don't think any TI win is a fluke. I think you have to be the best team at TI to win it,
right?
Because of the like how difficult it is to win. There's so many games to play. It's a double elim, so like players, you know, like teams adapt to you. So like in that case, I don't think any TI win is a fluke. But it doesn't, winning TI doesn't make you the best team of the year, and it certainly won't make you the best team of all time just by winning two of them.
All right, then, where do you stand on this, Mr. Snare?
So I want to say I actually like the idea of, you know, as and initially, right, I wanted to be all on board of Prof and saying, and like, you know, at five, you have to have the same team for us to be able to consider you as the best team, right? But then I was thinking about that 2015 EG, the one that won that TI, because who did they have? Who left the team? Jai and Arteezy left, right?
Yeah.
Just before they got Aoi and Sumail.
Right.
And I kind of feel like, for a while, like, I actually think that like three members kind of define the team, because like Sumail came in and how they changed their playstyle is that he just played more straightforward mid, with Fearful basically doing the same shit, not that much different. But I kind of feel like to be able to lay a claim on saying you're the best team, I'm definitely with Prof. You can't just win two tournaments in the span of a year, right? As this particular five-man of OG, the only player that has won any other tournament, the only players that have won any other tournaments on the team was Jirax, not with OG, was with Liquid. I think he won like one or two tournaments with them. Sebs won nothing with them.
Jirax also won majors with OG, though.
Oh, but then that's fine. Like, then he's part of that OG, right? And
right.
And then Ana won, I think they won the one major. Was yet Boston major, right? That Ana.
Ana won, I think, and Kiev. So Ana's won two majors with OG.
Yeah, Boston and Kiev, right? Within this OG team, I would say that the core, what really defines the team for me is, in terms of their playstyle, right? Let's not talk about like the psychology outside of the game, although that's probably a huge component.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a bit as well.
Yeah. Just in terms of their players, that team is entirely centered around the play of Ana, the play of Topson, and the play of Jirax, right? Between those three players, I don't think you can ever argue that they've really been part of some confluence, some configuration of a team outside of winning TI, that you could ever put in a, yo, best of all time, you guys were just super dominant or whatever. Versus, say, you can have where you have a puppy, mid one. Who plays support for Secret now? Who was playing support this tournament?
It was Papi and Yapso.
And Yap, right? You can actually argue that, though, like, Secret's changed a lot over the last 3 years, right? But since they got mid one from Fnatic, what, TS6, TS7? Since they got him from there, he's been, like, he's in the team. Same old thing with Yapso, same with Papi, right? For me, that now defines the team. And they've been dominant as that particular duo. Let's see, Yapso joined 2017, mid one joined 2016. So for me, this defines the team, and you can actually argue that, yo, this team, these three players have been playing well enough, consistently enough, placing highly enough, even with other garbage hero players coming in and out, that you can say, all right, the core of this team is still good enough to be in that GOAT contention, because they won a lot of tournaments with different players. OG, it happens, don't get me wrong, and they're really, really good, but basically I don't see it happening. I don't see this happening outside of TI in a situation where everyone isn't affected by the pressure of TI, right? Like, if this was an ESL on Hamburg, for example, I don't think there's any chance that OG wins the tournament as dominantly as they do. They might win regardless, but they're never going to be look as dominant, look as hot.
Like, they seem like by far the best team to adapt to a meta. Like, they can pick it up the fastest, but with a smaller tournament that doesn't have as many games, do they necessarily win? So, yeah, sure. Like, the fact that you can win TI, it's a magnificent achievement. Probably, you know, like, I don't think it's going to be topped in a while. But it doesn't automatically make you the best team. Like, you need more than just two TI wins.
Okay, so let's build on this, boys. So I think, let's start. We can all give our top five Dota teams of all time. I think, Snare, you can start.
Oh, wait, why are you throwing me under the bus? I'll start at number five to throw you a bone, because as much as I don't think OG winning TI back-to-back twice makes you the best team ever, I do think that's a strong argument for, like, some top five type shit, because of how good they looked when they won, especially this one. Last year was like, hey, LGD should have won, you know, Seb did things, Ana, like, goes 1v9 in the main event every other game, you know, every single game they play is a comeback. It is what it is. Shit's weird. Shit happens. But this year, like, as the tournament went on, it was like, all right, fine, guys, the gap between you and everybody else is increasing to a really outlandish degree, so we'll give you that one. Number four... Oh, wait, are we still counting it only as the post-TI3 era, right?
Yeah, I would like to say that, because I think Na'Vi and Alliance have their own special place in the Hall of Fame. I think if you're going to count that, like, I think you could put them one and two. Yeah,
I think the scene is also, like, small enough before TI4 that, like, it's less competitive, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So while they are legendary teams, I don't think those two could really qualify as, like, all-time best. Like, they certainly have an argument, but, like, I wouldn't put them in the top five personally.
All right, I'm glad. We agree, right? So where I was going to go next, so number five for me would be OG, just because of what... Five, dog. Number four, right? And this is actually going to be it's another TI winner, but it's going to be a little bit more controversial, right? And I think they're fourth because... They haven't obviously won as many TIs. I don't even think they've won as many overall tournaments as OG. They're going to be forgotten in terms of, like, just a casual player's imagination. But in my mind, there is a time in Dota before this team, and there's a time in Dota after this team. And for me, that's Wings. Wings changed Dota, like, a lot. Yo. The amount of pro players I've talked to that are like, yo, dude, Wings, just Wings. Channel the spirit of Wings, you can win Dota and you'll be fine. So that's my number four team. Number three, that's where it starts to get difficult. I would say number three for me is this last iteration of LGD. It didn't look that hot this year, but when they were looking hot last year, it was like, all right, guys, like, the only teams that were, of course, consistently beating them were, what, Liquid, and they lost to OG in the finals.
I mean, they were beating VP that year, and VP looked monstrous. That's I think, enough to put them there for me as well, yeah.
Yeah. And then third would then be VP, because, you know, it was VP. You know, it's kind of hard to have basically four or five same players be dominant for 3 years. It's going to change now, obviously, because, you know, disappointing not to win TI, but they're still, like, outlandishly good. And then, fuck my life, I can't believe I have to say that Liquid is probably the best team consistently.
All right.
not happy about this at all. please give me a convincing argument, Prof, so I can change my mind.
You just use the same tactic that all the old StarCraft players use. He cheesed. Like, there's nothing more disappointing to me at this TI than watching Liquid beat fucking Lan'em by cheesing things with a Tiny that can throw trees and kill heroes in two shots. So I was just like,
dude,
how is this a reasonable way to win a game? But I mean, gotta give props.
The cheese is in the game, right?
It's like, I mean, like, that was the old StarCraft 2 thing where it's like, oh, you know, it's like, it's cheesy way to win. It's like, I mean, it's effective.
Yeah, but it's bullshit.
Like, I mean, that hero was so stupidly broken. The fact that they could, like, get, and people were like, oh, but you just don't allow him to farm two crits and, like, and all the other stuff. I'm like, you do realize that, like, all the games at TI are going to 40 minutes.
Yeah, you can't.
Like, a vaguely capable, like, Tiny player will get to that point, and then what do? And they had a freaking, what is that thing? Man. The his ultimate is, he makes a copy of himself.
Arc Warden.
Oh, the Arc Warden. Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm just going to be spawning double damage runes the whole, like, this can't be reasonable. Why is this a thing?
The dumbest thing I saw, honestly, with the Tiny was Tiny Void was the dumbest thing. Yeah. Like, you get Chrono, alright, okay.
I don't know if you were awake for that Arc Warden Tiny game. Arc Warden was just spawning double damage runes, yeah, and Tiny was throwing trees for 1.2k damage per hit, and he's throwing six of them. Like, yeah. That's your 35k, your 35k net worth gyro? Dead. Fights don't even start, then it's dead. It's like...
Yep. Seems balanced.
Yeah, and that... yeah, it's like throwing it, like, what is it? It's like 600 range or something. It's like, no, dude, come on.
That should need to be nerfed.
Yeah, like, it needs to be. I mean, I'm not salty about Liquid doing that. It just seems like a really stupid thing that, like, it somehow wasn't caught before it got into the game. But I mean, props to Liquid for figuring it out, because Tiny ate some heavy bans after that.
You have no choice.
Where are you sitting? Where are you sitting in your top teams, though, Prof? That's what I want to know.
I mean, my top teams, like, I think my top five would probably be the same, just like, maybe a different order. Like, I think Secret would be probably in there for me. Like, I'm not going to give an order because, like, I'd really have to go sit down and, like, you know, do the freaking pros and cons. But, like, I think my top five would probably be Team Secret, Team Liquid. OG is definitely in there. Virtus Pro, I think, is in there. Wings, I think... I struggle to place Wings because they're incredibly important to Dota, but, like, I don't know how good they are as a team for, you know, like, a length of time.
Yeah,
they're certainly one of the most impactful, but are they one of the best? I think is the real thing I would struggle to say there. I mean, I think maybe the EG team that won TI5 would be a team to look at.
Because that year they were the only team like playing with Secret in all the finals.
Yeah,
it's kind of crazy.
Like, I mean, I don't like Sumail. I think he's a jackass, and like overrated, he's so good at a degree. Like, he's still probably one of the five best mids ever, but I still think he, like, the amount of like love that guy gets from American TI fans is just like, dude, come on.
Yeah, just relax.
Like, just chillax. Like, I think there are better players than him, even though he is amazing. But I definitely think, like I said, I'm not going to rank them, but like, those would be my five. EG, Team Liquid, Team Secret, OG and Virtus Pro. I think those are the top five, but the order, I think, can be argued personally.
All right, that's fair.
What you got, Kamsta? What you got, fam?
All right. So, at number... Okay, let me start off. At number three, I got EG, Kappa.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm kidding. Okay. Yeah. So, number one, I'm going to put this OG roster down as I think it's the best one, right?
Disgusting.
Going out of
I don't win more than two tournaments, bro.
Prof, do you also hear some weird static coming through on your sound, bro?
Yeah. I just hear a kid that's like He lives the dream. It's like you win TI twice, it makes you automatically the best.
And then, like, I think we're not actually on a podcast with Kamuel. He's been replaced by the OG Twitter handle, man.
Good. I don't know, boys. If we look at the core of that roster, like, it's they've won 4 majors. Like, those two, I don't know. I'm going to go with. Number two is the hardest for me to pick, actually, because I don't know whether I give it to VP for being so dominant for so long, or I give it to Liquid for being so dominant, or not as dominant as Virtus Pro, but actually showing up at TIs. I think it's also impressive. So
I mean, that is VP's biggest knock, is that they've never done well at TI. The best they've ever gotten is a top 6. That's going, like, you know, it's like, I mean, TI is like the your year end finals at school. Like, it's not the be all and end all, but it does count the most.
Yeah, I mean, if France won 10 Euro UEFA Europa, not, what do you call it?
Euros.
The Euros. It's like impressive, but if they never win a World Cup, it's like, are you really the best in the world? I don't know. So I think I'll give Liquid number two, because they've made two finals and they won one, and they've been quite dominant for a while, right? Obviously, they did swap out one player in Weha this year as opposed to Matumba Mine in the last 2 years, but I do like this Liquid roster. Three is easy Virtus Pro for me, because I think, again, for 3 years in the Dota 2 world, they actually dominated. They were the best team. And when they were winning, it wasn't like best of 5 finals and shit. They went through a phase where they won 3 ESL majors, 3-0 in all of them. That's like a level of dominance that you've never heard of in Dota 2, right? So for me, actually, I actually put them at number 2 for that. Give Liquid the number 3. Number four,
Chinese team.
Number four, it's going to be funny, because actually I'm going to give a spoiler here. No Chinese teams make my list.
Oh, right? That's actually really surprising, honestly.
Yeah, and I'm a big China Dota fan. I'll say that. Number four, I think, is either this iteration of, I think this iteration of Team Secret or the TI5 Secret. I can't decide, because both of them look really dominant, right? I think the Secret is a bit more impressive. I think they've won 2 majors this year, maybe 3 majors this year. They were in finals of all the other majors that they didn't win, minus the one where VP was in the finals against Vici. Like, I think they run this year. They were the best team by far. And I think they had their best TI finish ever also this year at 4th or some shit. Obviously, also, a bit disappointing for them.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the same knock as against VP, is that they've never, they haven't even made the final.
I get that.
That being said, though, about Secret, something that I think is really impressive is that TI5 run, as dominant as they were that year, their only real competition was like IG and EG. Yeah. Now it's like there's a lot of good teams, and they've been looking really good anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I agree with that. Yeah. Because that TI5 was also like all the China teams decided to wake up there at TI, but like prior to that, there was no Chinese teams in the scene. They were just all so bad for the rest of the year. So I think this Liquid is actually a much better roster. So they get my number four. And number five, I actually, like, EG gets my 5th spot, because I think they've been a very consistent team, but I don't know which iteration of EG to give it to, because that year, they won TI5. I think at TI5, they played out of their minds to win it, right? PPD, like Sumail said, he thinks he's the greatest captain of all time, the way he captained that one. I think Sumail had one of the greatest TI performances ever. I think AUI, like, even though he hasn't done much outside of his career after he got kicked from them, like in that tournament he was a large factor of them winning. So I don't know if I give it to that roster. This current iteration of EG just finished 3rd all the time. It's like, for me, why I give EG the 5th spot is that I feel like for a long time a similar core of players have been consistently one of the best teams in the world. They had like a couple of rough years as well, but I don't know. I think TI4 EG is the roster I give.
TI4 EG, no ways, dude. What?
TI4 with Mason, what are you talking about, bro?
Yeah, that team, like, how dude, competitive that, was that the team, TI4 year?
If you remember, that team got, like, what was it, 3-22 in the... No, what was it? It was like...
Yeah, in a final against IG.
They got dumpstered to a degree that was just like, that was brutal, dude. Like, that team was good, but, like, for me, that team was always like, they were the best playing against Team DK. Like, that was the one team that could, like, outplay Team DK
That's actually true, yeah. Consistently.
In those games,
Especially in the early game, because back then DK was monstrous early game, but PPD had to figure it out.
Like, PPD just knew how to, like, draft against them like absolute monsters, right? And it was a legitimately good team, but, like, you can't tell me that TI4 EG was, like, top five, dog. No.
You think TI4 EG is better than TI5 EG, cuz?
No ways, dude.
Nah,
like, the problem for me is, like I said, a lot of people will, I think, overvalue a TI win, right? As opposed to, like, if they won TI, they must get, like, a lot more points than a team that, you know, consistently won throughout an entire year. If you win, like, four majors back-to-back, like, dude, you've won, like, the four biggest... four of the five biggest events of the entire year.
Yeah.
So, like, that has to count way more. Like, you know, like, if you give each of the, like, say that you, you know, a win at those four majors costs 200 points each, and a win at TI costs 600 points. It's like...
Right.
You know, you've got 800 points from winning other events, and TI gets you 600. Like, that's, you know... TI matters the most, but it's not like, it can't be the be all and end all. And I think too many people overrate the value of a TI win when the rest of the team's year was not as good as it could have been. Like OG, right. Like how many games, how many tournaments did OG even play this year?
Four, I believe.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
They did garbage
You don't get TI. Points for not going to LAN, bro. Like, sorry, like, you don't get points for not attending.
Right, that's fair. So, okay, I do agree. I think actually, just looking at the results alone, like, that TI5 EG also beat, they won the DAC as well, which was about the second biggest one, other than TI, so they actually won the two biggest events.
Yeah. And also, that was where Sumail was 0-5 at 10 minutes on Storm, but 10-5 at 20 minutes. It's like, very impressive.
For sure. Okay, so TI5 but EG.
Like, for me, I think, like, the one thing about Dota is that it's like there is no out-and-out best player of all time, and there's no out-and-out best team of all time, and that's, like, exactly what you want.
Right.
You want
there
to be
that.
A debate.
Best players are teasy, easy game, boys.
I'm sorry, bro.
I'm maybe not relaxed.
Like... Arteezy is an amazing player, but when I watch him, like, PvE versus, like, you know, when I watch him play PvE in, like, TI knockout games, I'm just like, bro.
Oh,
you got to fight with your team, home dog. Like, that doesn't work when you're, like, fucking fighting creeps and your team's getting, like, dumpstered up, like, you know, inside their own base. And you're just like, but guys, I'm taking their tier threes. Like, yeah, it doesn't help if
Here's
my base is gone, bro.
Arteezy is just next level, right? Remember when Newbie won TI and then they spent the next few months just playing MMOs? Arteezy is like, let me just play the MMOs now, dude.
Yeah, he starts playing MMOs in TI. No, I mean, like, that is, I think, Arteezy's, like, the biggest slight against him is that it's not that, like, you know, it used to be that whole thing of, like, oh, like, he always plays much better than his team at TI. Like, that was that whole thing on Secret at TI5 when he was apparently, like, the only good player on the team. But it's, like, it's a consistent thing at TI that, like, he seems to be the only good player on his team when he gets there. And, like, when you look at it, it's, like, that he's basically just doing the, like, the old burning thing of, like, oh, the game is going bad. I have to now ultra carry this team and never attend a fight until I'm, like, 8 slotted. It's just, like, that ain't going to work. You're like, you need to change things. And I think, right. Like, I think the pressure gets to Arteezy at TI in that it makes him want to, like, carry harder.
Yeah.
And, like, that's always, like, until he wins TI, I think that's going to be the biggest slight against him. Like, he has to overcome that. Like, at everything else, he's an absolutely amazing player. But at TI, like, that pressure cooker gets to him. And, like, I don't think he's ever performed, like, amazingly out of TI, outside of, like, TI4.
All right. That's fair. That is fair. So now, let's let's end all the good old Dota PMA talk about TI before we get into all the juicy stuff. I did say last week, I'm not going to talk about any of the drama of TI while TI was going on because it was too fucking special and I was enjoying it too much. But this week, all the fucking juicy is coming out. And I want to end off on the last topic of TI in terms of the gameplay. Who was your guys' MVP? I'm going to go straight up. I used to call Thompson, Dogson, but now I just think he's a godsend. He was MVP for me at the entire event.
Oh, you're just impressed that he got a rampage on Monkey King, aren't you?
He was playing like a god, dude. The one where I got sold on this Thompson, I was never a fan of the guy. I thought he was really bad, right? Like, I was like grand opinion. I thought he'll never be in the league of the Miracles and the Sumails and shit. But where he made me a convert was, I think he was playing against, was it Seek? Who was the second team in his group, in OG's group? Was it Liquid?
LGD.
LGD.
LGD. No.
No, but LGD topped their group. It was Vici.
LGD was in that. Oh, yeah. It was against Vici. Yeah, where Vici. He was playing Invoker. He ghost walks behind, like way in front of his team. He walks
straight in. Oh, shit. He plants the ward
secret
down,
chop,
dude.
And he plants the ward down. So sick, sets up for his team for that fight, and then they win the fight. That was like next level shit. Yeah, and obviously, like, he like almost 20 bombed in like 2 out of 4 finals games. And like, that's just obvious stuff, but I think I'm a convert. I'm a godsend fan now.
Oh my god, dude!
Like, I think this TI, yeah, I think he is probably the MVP. I think there are arguments for other players, but I think on balance, he probably is the MVP just because of like how important his games, you know, like how important his performances were to his team.
Right,
because. Like, Jerex, I think, is the other one that you can contest with. But, like, the problem is, like, there were so many games where Thompson just, like, balled out of control that, like, even if Jerex had a, you know, like, a great series of early ganks, like, Thompson just going ultra ham and, like pinning everyone to, pinning everyone to the wall, like, really just gave his team a lot more space than at times you thought that they might have gotten.
All right, let me open my mouth up nice and wide, make space for Jerex. because, yo, guys, man, there was one game where, this is one of the games in the final, right? So like I said, I was watching a lot of shit back to front. So I'm watching this game, and I think it was game 2 or game 3. It was definitely Miracle playing Invoker, so it was game 1. And he's top Miracle, right? Pushing on a tier 2 tower. Seb TP's in onto the tower. Miracle sees it. He's like, cool, time to get back, right? He's playing TA, gets in his 2 last hits, refracts, blinks away. And he blinked into the tree to try and TP out. There was no ward to scout him. No one to give vision there in that area. But he blinked into an avalanche because Jerex was prepared, already waiting, knew exactly where he was going to be at. And then, like, there were so many ganks that happened. It got to a point, right, just over this, like, the course of the last, like, the last 2 days, excuse me, where they played LGD. Obviously, I've only watched LGD now and Liquid, where OG played them. And there were so many ganks that happened where if Jerex was off the map, 30 to 45 seconds later, somebody would be dead somewhere on the map. No matter what stage of the game it was. It was like, this is actually kind of insane. If this guy is, if he's invis, if he's smoked, if he's blinking, something will happen that's going to give OG an advantage. There was one game where he was playing... What was he playing? He was playing Lion. And well, this was back in the group stages, right? This was like early on. I'm just like, oh, whatever. This is when I was still like, OG is going to be this meme team that can't really fluke it again twice in a row. This team's actually kind of garbage. And then he was trying to defend a gank on time. They came to gank Ana in the mid lane with 2 different heroes coming from 2 different angles. And one hero was Tiny. The other one was an SF, I believe. He hexes SF. Hexes SF, impales the Tiny, and then Ana was on like a sliver of health left. 1 long range raise would have killed him. And during the duration of the initial hex, mana drains him away on the SF, such that there's 0 mana left for him to die. The Tiny tosses him onto Ana, and it's like, oh, it's chill. There's not enough damage now with just the 1 hero, and you've now helped me get back to safety, and there's not enough damage for SF to finish the gank. And I was like, wow, okay, this is all in less than 4 seconds. He had no vision. Catches a glimpse of it, he's like, I'm going to make this shit happen, guys. Like, I think it has to be one of those 2 players. I can very much accept a Thompson argument because there were games like... There's a game that they had against... The game that they had against EG.
Yeah.
Where I was watching Thompson, and I was watching his movement as well across the map, right? And a lot of times when mid players are moving to try and apply pressure as well across the map to, you know, open up space for their cores, they do it in such a way that they're like, listen, guys, I'm still trying to get my own farm up. I'm still trying to make sure that I can still contest and compete for the later portion of the game. And Thompson was like, I've got 2 items. That's actually all I need. Let me go. You know, Ana's playing Spectre. It's fine. He'll carry the game later. It doesn't really matter. I'm playing Tiny right now. Sure, I can keep farming to get myself to the Daedalus Axe point. But I've got Blink Echo. I can win fights now. Let's go win fights now. And they won every single fight. And then eventually, when it started, when they sort of looked like they're losing fights, Arna's farmed enough now. That doesn't really matter. You know, there's decisions like him getting that defusal in the final game, which is some next level shit. So I think those two players, definitely the argument can be made. Me personally, I was like outrageously impressed by Jirax. Especially because like with Thompson last year, I was like, okay, dude, you're really good, but you also haven't peaked yet. You're probably going to get better. With Jirax, I thought he had peaked, right? As good as he was, I thought he'd still peaked when he was on Team Liquid. And then to be like, yo, dude, you actually got better afterwards. To me, like, I came away from this tournament after watching Jirax have played, saying to myself, it's not obvious to me who got the better trade between trading Miracle for Jirax. And the fact that I have to think about that was like, all right, okay, already I have to look at this player differently. And then I look at his play, I'm like, okay, for me, I really think that Jirax is the MVP. But the only other really strong argument, I think, is for Thompson.
I think I kind of agree with that because, like, it's very hard to quantify who is the definitive MVP. I don't think you can actually do that. It's just opinion.
It's but because like, of the way... I think it's because of the way that OG plays as well.
Mm.
Is that, like, apart from those two players... It's more of just like, it's a wonderful harmony of like how to play Dota, almost like Wings. You know, it's like, you can point out one or two players on Wings as being the best, but it's like, it's such a hard thing to say like, oh, this guy would definitely, you know, you could take this guy out, put him onto a Team Secret and he'd be, you know, better or just as effective. Like it just doesn't OG doesn't feel like that kind of team. Whereas, like, you know, it's like you could take Sumail off of EG and he'd still be a god. Like, that's not even a debate. Like, he would definitely be a god. Whereas, like, we've never seen Thompson on anything other than OG. So, is he going to be god? We don't know. Like, he seems to work absolutely perfectly with OG's style, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to automatically be, you know, as good on a different team.
And to your point as well, actually, whenever we've seen OG playing without their full complement, they're nowhere near looking as, like, dominant and OP. It's just like, they're still good, but it's not, now they're just, like, normal good.
Yeah.
But, like, also, I think whoever makes the calls on OG deserves a shout-out. Because OG, of all the teams that played at this TI, right, there's no team that's better at moving with their timings. As soon as they hit a big power spike, whether it be an item, a talent, or an ultimate being available... It never takes more than 30 seconds for them to group up as five and go make a play.
I agree with that.
And it's incredible to watch. It's like, yo, these guys understand what their drafts are supposed to do better than anybody else right now.
Because when they hit their timings, they don't give a fuck how many kills they are behind, what towers there. They don't care. They hit their timing. They can be 20k net worth behind. They divide. They go. They don't give a fuck. But like, I think the point I want to make about the Jirax thing is that it's very, like him playing Tiny, for example, he makes so many moves in the early game. He can, like, potentially be involved in, like, 6 kills in, like, 5 minutes. Like, those 6 kills alone, that's game winning. That alone is done. In 6 minutes, he could completely win the game by the advantage it gives you making plays like that. I think, again, back to his Tiny, like, in the middle of team fights, chasing heroes, he can blink into 5 heroes and get the toss back target exactly the right one to start off a fight for his team. That's game winning. It doesn't matter how good your teammates are, how farmed your carries are, whatever. If you take out your enemy's most important hero right at the start of the fight, like, that's winning the game for your team. I think Jirax is an absolute monster. He also has the biggest pass 4 hero pool, I think, because he plays all the pass 4 heroes really well, like the Earth Spirits, the Tasks, all those aggressive, flashy shit. But he also plays defensive pass 5s in pass 4s. He plays Oracle, he plays Wyvern, he plays all that, like, quote-unquote pass 5 heroes as a pass 4, and he gets farm and he does his fucking job to win the fights. I think Jirax is a strong contender for MVP this year as well. Like, between those two, I'm happy either way.
Yeah, I can put this. Yeah. Oh, man. That's, nobody comes to listen to Esports Central for no disagreement. What the fuck is this?
What the fuck? Okay, now we're done with all the positive stuff. If you enjoyed us talking about Dota, all PMA shit, teams doing well, players being gods, that's it. That's it for the rest of the episode. Now is all the nitty-gritty shit, right? Let's go back to the topic we're talking about. Like, we're talking a lot about OG being skilled, OG being this, OG being that. But I think a lot of it comes down to, you see Scan tweeting this, you see the interviewer saying this, you see the team saying this themselves, the psychology of it all, right? That mentality of, we don't care it's TI, we don't care who we play, we have faith in ourselves, we have faith in our teammates. Snare, how important do you think that shit is to their success?
Oh, everything, dude. Honestly, like... You know, earlier when we were talking and I was saying that for me, OG, even though they're not the best team ever, in terms of like the Dota, psychologically, I don't think they can really argue there's been better teams at like these really high pressure situations, teams that like seem to stay fine mentally, regardless of losses, everyone's still chilled. Like there's a lot of tournaments this year that you like lesser teams, honestly, would not have stuck together through TI 8 and 9. Lesser teams would have broken up afterwards, right? With a string of mediocre results. But the fact that they didn't, the fact that no matter what the case was, right, you never... For me, one of the things about how you know a team is really, 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 really way too strong when it comes to the mental aspect of the game. If you as a viewer never actually are certain that they've lost until they actually lose the game, when it's over, 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 regardless of how bad the early game has gone, the mid game has gone, item timings, whatever the case may be, the game's still going and you genuinely are like, well, they could easily rally, turn this around, 2-3 fights, and they're back in the game, and they're going to go. And you're certain that that's going to happen no matter what. I think that, like, it's really everything there. I honestly, like, let's say if this... I think if the team liked each other less as people, there's no way that they succeed as much as they have up until this point. But it just works. Somehow, it just works. There's no way... Like, if we look at all the metrics on paper, right, there's no way it actually works. There's no way you tell me that OG, that Seb wins TI twice, right? That shouldn't be happening. But
I mean,
the fact that it
think
does,
about and Seb has won TI more than Puppy and PPD and
Koro.
Yeah,
Seb has won.
Think about that for a second. And he was retired for like 3 years.
Dude, like he had put away his gaming keyboard. He wasn't prepared to play TI, dude. Dude, Seb has won TI more, like infinite percent more times than Bernie has.
Burning on our TV. And the funny thing about Seb as well is that not that he just retired, it's people considered him, like his nickname is Fucking Mad. They used to call him Fucking Bad because that's how he was.
He
was there from the start and he still did fuck all for his entire career. And then all of a sudden he joined the TI winning squad. It's actually mind-boggling.
Yeah. I mean, it is just like insane how that guy's like narrative has changed. Simply because he's been on like such a good team. I mean, it's like he certainly deserves to be there. I mean, like I did that Axe game in last year's TI final might be like his PAD's, PAD's de resistance, but like that was just like that was nuts. But
yeah,
still, it's like just crazy to think to like that guy,
the guy, that guy.
Like who's like I mean, before this, like the most famous team he was on was the team where Sokshka freaking stunned the ball instead of the, Beastmaster in like TI3 qualification. That was the team that he was on. Like, and he was the support there, was doing like just about nothing. So it's just like crazy.
Dude, I remember watching Seb playing for, was it Sigma Int? And running, like getting YOLO stomped every game on offlane Venomancer type shit. It was awful. Now it's like, oh, hey, by the way, this guy can win you TI. Like, what the hell? And I think actually, like, the fact that whenever they ask, I mean, there's no one who can tell you that Seb is the best player on the team, right? No matter
right.
how much you
no,
like
no, no,
OG.
He's not.
But the fact that when asked that every OG player says that he's the MVP and he's the reason they win, and it's like, and then when you see how he interacts with the team, it's like, okay, this has very little to do with what's happening in the game. It has obviously this evolved, but the salient point about this man's success and excellence has many much more to do with outside of the game and his interaction with his players, more so than it does. I mean, even when I was watching that the documentary that they came out with, the Red Bull one, Against All Odds, and after they recruited Ana, Seb was talking to the team saying, okay, guys, listen, we need to, who's going to play offlane for you guys? And the team looks at him and says, what are you talking about, dog? You're the offlaner. Just, you're going to do this, right? Like, I feel like if you're choosing to play with Seb, it has nothing to do with his mechanical skill about the game, you know?
Yeah, and it's also like, I've never liked Seb. I've never fucking liked him. Fucking Bad was my favorite nickname for a player of all time, right? But I can't deny, I mean, you look at before even TI, go back to 2017, look at that Kiev Major when he was the coach for OG. Looking at this, like, it's only a small tidbit of insight we're getting through those documentaries, but the way he used to talk to his team and shit, like from a coach's aspect, the motivation and shit was mind-boggling. It was amazing to see. Again, the TI8 documentary is a similar story. The way he keeps his team grounded. Topson is dying 50 times in the mid lane because FY is sitting there fucking him in the ass. But Seb's like, relax, we're going to catch you up. You go jungle, it's fine. It's fine. Like, that kind of shit means a lot. I think it means so much so that Jerax in the late night show after the late game show, whatever it's called, after TI, he was saying, he was sitting there with those guys drinking and shit, and he's like, listen, everybody's fucking good at this level. It doesn't matter about skill and shit. Everybody is good. That's why we're at TI. It's about all those other things. It's about being calm. Like, he's talking about all the psychological aspects, the Seb aspects, I'm going to call it from now on in Dota, because that shit matters. No Tail and Seb, that upbeat attitude, keeping their young guys composed and going all the time. I think it means so much, man.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, pressure cooker environments like that, like, invariably, they hamper players that can't handle it. So, like, you know, like, their skill level, like, drops a bit. Like, you can see, like, and, you know, I was pointing about, like, someone like Arteezy. Like, he becomes a worse player at TI because of the amount of pressure that is involved. Whereas yeah. Seb and No-Tail seemingly, I mean, Seb especially, just seems to play better under that circumstances. Doesn't mean that Seb is a better player than Arteezy. It just means that in that environment, he is more valuable to your team than Arteezy.
Yeah. I agree with that. But now, I think it's very clear at this point, the positive effects of the psychological part of the game. But let's look at the negative effects, right? You're talking about chokers. Look at Mid One, right? He's been rated as one of the best mid players of all time, especially in the last 2 years. He literally been styling. I mean, styling on kids, right? And at this TI, I think it was the biggest, like, consistent choke from I've seen of a player ever. I was literally calling him Mid None because he was doing so little in games. He was hampering his fucking team. I thought, like, he was not looking good. And this is, I mean, if it's another player, you could say it's hard games, it's this, it's that. But Mid One, they used to first pick him Ember Spirit at points. He didn't give a fuck what lane matchup, what this, what that. And he'd still carry his team. But this event, it was sad to see. And even in his interview, he was saying things like, he never looks at KDA, this, that. But his first game on the main stage, he was looking at the scoreboard all the time to see how well he was doing. He was caring about the fucking things that don't matter, right?
It's like, I don't know. He was garbage at this event.
Yeah.
That was bad, dude.
Like, by his standards, he was absolute garbage.
Yeah.
And it's a pattern for a lot of years now, right, Snap? Because every year you get Chinese teams interview and they say, why do Chinese teams do so well in TI? And I think it was QQQ, coach of LDD, said, it's not that we do well at TI. It's that we just play our normal Dota. It's all these Western teams come in so nervous to play TI. And it looks bad. And then now this year, I think it's kind of flipped. Because I think the added pressure on all the Chinese teams... being China, the patriotism, the carrying your weight of your nations, LGD and Vici's brotherhood, like, how did that impact shit, Sne?
Yeah, they definitely, like, being in China clearly messed up the Chinese teams. The one constant, over the years, there have been several constants in Dota, right, that haven't changed much up until the last few years. So it's always been, one of the constants was East-West, but we all had a somewhat feeling that, nah, it's not really going to be tenable forever. There was no double winner. I was very surprised to see that change, but... one of the biggest constants was, like you say, Western teams would show up, shit the bed at TI. Chinese teams would just play regular Dota, do what they regularly do, and have their heads in the game and just be fine. And it'll be okay. They're not going to really mess this up. What's interesting, right, is that traditionally the top six teams are mostly Chinese. I think the only time that was different was this year and last year.
Yeah, Chinese teams did tend to, like, stack the top six.
Yeah, I mean, normally it's, like, pretty bad, right? It's like, yo, you guys...
I mean, what was it? TI4, the one that everybody hates, was, like, EG was in the, like, what came third, and then the rest of the top six was all Chinese teams.
Yeah, all Chinese.
TI7 had four Chinese teams in the top six. Top three was LFY, Newbie, and fucking Liquid. Like, it was crazy how dominant Chinese teams have been at TI, right?
Yeah, but then, now, when a TI is in China, right... it's not simply just that it's home turf, right? Is that, yo, guys, Chinese teams are... like, Chinese fans, excuse me, are fucking rough, dude. The Chinese community tends to demand a lot out of their players, tends to be extremely flamey. And it's one thing when you're like, look, I only have to deal with this online. I don't really have to worry about it. It's quite another, I can imagine, playing a game, hearing the crowd screaming your name before the game, losing one game, and then walking out of the booth into dead silence. Right, that is going to fuck with you no matter who you are. It's really going to get to you. You have to have some really insane mental resilience to get through that. And I can imagine as well that because, like, as a Chinese fan, or as a Chinese player, excuse me, losing in front of your home base fans You know what Weibo is going to look like later that day. You can see the faces around you. You know people are going to be calling for you to be kicked. You know there's going to be someone in the background that has some influence that's going to be like, fuck that guy. I actually performed like trash. Get him out of my game. Get him out of my team or something. It's like really a lot. And also, because it would be one thing also if last year LGD had won, then I think some of the pressure would have been off. But now it's like, hey, guys, listen. When was the last time any of you Chinese motherfuckers won a big tournament? What's happening here? You know, you guys are... You aren't actually the only team that's been doing, like, it's Vici that won Epicenter, and then LGD, what did they win this year? They won nothing. MDL, I think, right? No, they won, that was last year. That was last year.
Yeah.
They didn't win
this
anything
year. They've just
year.
Been placing top four, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, you've had one tournament won by a Chinese team in Vici Gaming.
Oh, they won two majors. They won two majors.
Oh, two, yeah, excuse me. Two, right? But that's like, that's normally we expect that China's doing decently well. Right, but now all of you guys are having issues. All of you guys aren't really performing that well. This is the tournament where you normally are expected to do really well. But now everything that would the reasons why you normally do well, distance from the home audience, less pressure on you, and the ability to play clean Dota without having to worry about the additional mental pressure cooker stress of the tournament. All of that is not just taken away from you, but it's actually exacerbated. You have more pressure on you than the Western teams have on themselves. Because at least when they say TI is in Seattle or something, it's only EG that's American normally. DC.
American.
You know, quote unquote, American.
Sure. Right? The most American team I've seen in a long time, EG.
Right? USA.
But there's like four American players that really have to worry about this whole field situation. Everybody else is just like, guys, okay, we're stressed about TI, but honestly, we should actually be pretty chilled about this. Now with China, all of you are Chinese. It's only ex-Nova who's not. So it's like, okay, you guys are all playing in front of a home audience. You probably, all of you, apparently China, a lot of them live in the same like region, not necessarily the same area.
Yeah, they tend to congregate because of the team houses.
Yeah. So this is actually, like, I would have honestly, as much as I wanted LGD to win and I thought they could have won and I thought they played well enough to win, I don't think it's very surprising to see that China shat the bed in the way they did. Even though, honestly, I do think there was a little bit of overperformance from the team like RNG. Honestly, I think it's not as bad as it could be, right? Considering all the pressure, I think getting 1-13th, 16th, 1-8, 1-6... and 1-3 isn't really that bad in the grand scheme of things, considering all the teams involved.
The problem is it's like it's all like about the context of like what those teams actually looked like. Because RNG, they lost to Liquid, but like they could have beaten Liquid. It wasn't beyond them. There's just like the that last draft where they had to like go up against like an ultra farmed Tiny that could kill them at like extreme distance. It's like, that is part of the game. I'm not saying that Liquid didn't deserve to win, but like RNG could likely have made top six. I think, I don't think that LGD would have won TI, but I could certainly have seen them in the final. I think they could have beaten Liquid in that.
I agree completely.
Yeah. But I think if they didn't go for that dumbass Huskar draft, they would have probably won.
Well, I mean, they should have won the Huskar game. They had such a big advantage. Like, they outdrafted Liquid, I thought. They outplayed them for the majority
of the game. But here's the thing, right? It's like Prof was saying earlier, right? Games at TI now are going to go 35 to 40 minutes, just by and large, unless it's a really weird situation.
Like the meta just means that that's what's going to happen. Teams are too good to just like get steamrolled consistently.
I don't think it's a good idea in that kind of meta when you know that you're playing up against a team that's relatively evenly matched with you. I just don't think it's a good idea to pick a hero that does nothing at that point in the game. That like just cannot win late game Dota, right? It just who did they have that game? They had Chalice was playing Centaur, Ame played Lifestealer, and maybe played Huskar. I just don't see synergy between these three heroes just in J regularly, especially not in the context of guys we're going to be playing a later game because you're playing against TIA, Darkseer, ET Sven, right? No way you're not finishing that game in 20 minutes, which you would need to do to win with this Huskar. Yeah.
Especially not against Liquid. Like, Liquid are a good enough team that they'll drag that game out. So, like, unless you just completely, like, dumpster them in the lanes to, like, an unreasonable level, like, that game is going to go to a point where, like, fights are going to be very, very hard. So you have to be, like, so far ahead. It's just, it's like too gambly when you look at that. And I think LGD just, like, the... like I said, right at the beginning, it's like I just felt that they were too tilty. Like when they lose a game, like it's just like as soon as they lost a game in the series, you were just like, oh well, the series is done now, because they just they just didn't look like they were capable of winning after, you know, dropping a game. Like just the tilt factor cleaned that whole team up, it felt like.
Yeah, it is a thing. I mean, I'll still pin that LGD game 2 loss to throw, but I think to expand to the rest of the Chinese scene, I look at a team like VG Gaming. I think when VG Gaming won Epicenter, I don't think they were the best team at the event. I think like OG winning TI now, they were significantly the best. They were way ahead of the competition. They looked so much better. I mean, against Liquid in that finals, they looked like Liquid were amateurs, and the VG Gaming team was like playing a whole different game. Like it was that level of dominance, right? But now this pressure cooker environment is where I'm a big fan of the Chinese Dota scene, but I actually also hate the scene, the way it runs. It's like, again, that the nationalism, the pride, the weight of the nation, it is really
Fade's
nice
retired
to see.
This morning, hasn't he?
I was about to build up to that, because again, you have all this, your crowd, your fans, your this and that, it's great, but there's also a negative side to it. Like you guys said, when shit goes bad, the weeaboo is disgusting. There was a whole fucking Esports Haven article about shitty threads that went up. Like some of the stuff was like, who's the player that needs to be replaced the most? People fucking put all the 5 LGD players. Hello, this is like, I mean, I don't even have to explain why that's fucking dumb as shit, right? It's also the case of like, we're going to get to it later about the, that it's not great to play 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. This is not a healthy lifestyle, but that's the kind of training regimen coming to China to prep for things like TI. I don't think that's a healthy way to go on. And then you also have things where it's a very rigid scene, and we see taking an effect on a guy like Fade this morning, who announced he's okay. I hope it's a Chinese retirement, but he says he's retired, and over what? It's a case of him and RNG spoke about maybe doing potential transfers outside of, well, like, and that's not allowed in his contract. Come the fuck on now, guys. In the NBA, you get fined for this shit. You don't get banned for this shit. Like, now he's getting potentially blacklisted, so he's retiring before shit has to come. I don't think that's fair. Like, I think this in the environment is not a good environment to thrive. That's my opinion. I don't like this pressure cooker environment.
I mean, that is a thing that, like, unfortunately has tainted a lot of the... I mean, Chinese esports in general, is that, like, it does seem as though... The teams have, like, when they have your contract, they pretty much have your life. Like, you can't, I mean, that is why the whole meme about, like, Chinese retirements even exists. It's because, like, how do you get out of a contract? Well, you can retire.
You retire, yeah.
Like,
you
just have that's to get how out. They basically get out of a contract, is that, like, they basically just retire to get out of the contract and then sit out the remainder of the contract, and then they come back, like, a year or so later. Like, if they don't do that, they're not leaving. It's like, you're staying here, and that's, like, your lot in life. You're not going anywhere.
Yeah. And that's just clearly a fucked up. It's just even beyond just being messed up, it's just unsustainable.
Yeah.
You just can't have it. There will come a point where it's like you get situations like this where it's like, guys, I have to retire. What else must I do? And also we see year on year how like I think part of the reason as well why traditionally over the years we've seen the tiny teams tend to only ramp up their play closer and closer towards TI. And I think that's both is a negative for the scene in the sense that, like, yo, guys, this is probably not a good idea to be all in focus on the tournament. And that's, of course, an issue in Dota in general. But what it ends up doing is that, like, when you place the entire existence, the entire point of the team's existence around TI, it disincentivizes you from both learning, like learning to be a better team overall, like, irrespective of results at TI. Just like in the run-up to TI, you actually have to be a really strong team and know what you're doing. But beyond that, it also makes it very difficult for you to have motivation. Because like if you mess up at TI, you're like, well, that was an entire year wasted. Do I want to waste another entire year if I'm not 100% confident I can win TI? And my team is not really going to be supportive of me if I'm not confident I can win TI. Like, what's the point? And there's so many examples of like great Dota players who, after failing to win, Chinese Dota players, after failing to win a TI where they come fairly close, then they just drop off the map afterwards because it's like, well, now what? There's no point. I'm just thinking of every player from Newbie after they shat the bed at the OG TI. It's just like, well, now they're all garbage. What's the point? We can't really do anything anymore. I'm not going to say it's 100% due to TI, but that's like just.
And that's a big factor.
It's a huge factor. And it's like, come on, guys. Like, and the fact that the rest of the scene looks at people who have this great potential and just shrugs and says, oh, well, you didn't win TI. Fuck you, bro. We're going to look towards the next guy who's going to be able to come and win TI. You know, if he can't win TI either, cool. We don't care. Next person, next. You know, that just, it just doesn't help either. It's clearly unsustainable in the long term.
And yeah. It's absolutely ridiculous for a guy from VG Gaming of all teams, because they were top three in the DPC standing. Secret finished 14,400 points, VP 13,000, and Demi 11,000. Do you know what four was? EG at 6,800. They were up there with VP and Secret. Like, they won two majors this year. I would say they were a better team than VP this year. Like, they were one of the best teams of the year. Fade was arguably one of the best past four players. Okay, he didn't have the greatest TI, mind you, but like, there were some games where Fade's playing Magnus and shit, and you like, how is this guy even human? So it's very sad to see, right? I think I don't want to touch too much on like the actual situation, because like, if I was reading on Reddit, it's like the order of events happened today that Vici boss complained to RNG about contacting the player who was still playing in Vici during TI9. RNG claimed that they haven't contacted anyone except for Secret players, and that was after TI8. Vici boss apologized to the RNG guys, and then demanded an explanation from Fade. And then after that, Fade just straight up retired, right? So I don't know the complete story and how it unfolds.
That
shit,
sounds like, but unfortunately, that does sound like the old stories about like Chinese esports.
Yeah.
But regardless, it's ridiculous, right? It's ridiculous. I mean, fuck. In football, it happens all the time. Agents speaking to other teams' managers, not during transfer season. In NBA, it happens. LeBron phoning his mates to come join him next year. It happens everywhere, right? I don't think it's the greatest thing that it happens, but I don't think you can punish a player for hypothetically, like, moving. Like, I think you can. I think you can punish him, but, like, to this extent, I don't know if he's retiring purely off this or if he's just so down about TI, but I think the level of, I mean, the pressure cooker is taking effect a bad way in China. That's all it is. But I think we've hopped on the China mentality stuff bandwagon enough now. I think I want to go back to the West and talk about how the psychological stuff affects them there. Because, and I'm going to start it off with a tweet from Scant, okay? He says, and actually, I think I quoted this tweet last year as well. Okay, this is the wrong tweet. Fuck, I always open the wrong tweet. How do I do this?
You'd be bad.
You spend the most time on Twitter. How is this possible? Dude?
Exactly. Okay, yes. I'm pretty sure I quoted this last week as well. What VP will probably do, change roster. What they should do is hire a psychologist, demystify the mental block, then openly admit to not understanding. The mental side of the game is extremely difficult, but it's not the complete unknown. They are experts in this field. So this, for me, I think comes back to the Western scene a lot, right? We see OG now working with Mia. How do you pronounce the chick's surname?
I have no idea. I know.
I'm not sure.
But I know she's like most famous as the the sports psychologist that worked with the famously choking Astralis team before they won their first major. But the problem is that, like, you know, if there was like a one-stop shop solution and it involved sports psychology, then why does every choking team not use them?
Well, that's the question, right? There's two parts to this argument, but to finish my train of thought here, right? So Mia, I don't know what's her name. Mia Stellan, but I don't know actually her surname. I forgot it. But she is, I think, in esports, at least the top of the field, right? She worked with the Starless. She worked with Ench. She worked with OG now. We see the kind of mentality OG have. It's really good, right? Obviously, I'm going to get to the other side of this now, but I think it's important. And if you look at teams like Evil Geniuses and Secret, like I spoke about the Mint once example earlier, but team EG is like a great example to talk about in terms of like just having a bad mentality playing. Crit in his interview was like, oh yeah, we felt really down about losing to OG, and then we were super nervous playing the lower bracket game in the first day, and he's like you can see losing one game has such an effect on this guy. And it was a game that they were well capable of winning that game against OG. It was just like a shit happens. They ended up losing the series, but he's so down about the shit, and I think that's such a bad mentality to have. I think EG are like, I think this year, I don't think they were the best team at the tournament by any means, but I think the way they went out and the fashion they went out was rather pathetic, all things considered. I think they should have a stronger mental fortitude in these kind of situations. That's what I believe.
Yeah, saying you should is like, I mean, dude, that's such a sketchy situation to be in, because it's like, oh, why don't you just like fix the one thing that is famously unfixable? Like, how do you fix choking?
Yeah, but how like, much do you know, work it's on like, it, though, prof?
Yeah, yeah, you can work on it, but like what I'm saying is that you know it's not like a one-stop shop.
It's not like
you don't just walk into like a car dealership, you know, and say like, oh, I want this, and like you'll get like no, psychological problems don't work that way. What works for one person doesn't work for somebody else, and to just easily conflate, oh, like this person is working with this team, ergo this team is definitely going to be better. Not necessarily.
Yeah.
If they don't vibe with that team, well, I mean, it's just going to happen then. It's not going to work.
Look, I agree. I agree with you completely. I mean, Thorin has another tweet. I'm gonna quote it you as well. He's like he saw all this praise going around Mia and esports psychologists and stuff, and he says the exact same thing as you, Prof. He says, of course, Dota players have bought hook, line, and sinker that OG having Astralis or psychologist is a guaranteed plus. Let's just ignore the fact that you have mixed up the two Astralis lineups that were number one, as the majority of the recent dominance was not worth her.
Yeah. So for context, for anybody that doesn't understand, Astralis won their first major in 2017. They were a very good team, but weren't the number one. When they became the world number one last year and possibly the best team of all time, it was not with this lady. It was with a different sports psychologist. So
wow, I didn't know that.
To equate the two is incorrect. And that's okay. The problem is that people saying like, oh, she's automatically going to make OG the best. Like, no. That's exactly the point. Yeah. She helped Astralis. But it doesn't necessarily mean that she's going to help OG to the same degree or even, you know, necessarily, like, vibe with them. That's the problem.
You might not even help them at all.
Yeah, that's
you couldn't even make things worse.
Could very well be. Like, that's the problem, is that you can't just say it's automatically going to help. It very well could, but it could also just not do anything. You know, it's like saying, it's that whole thing of, like, you know, LeBron's a choker. You don't think LeBron went to, like, you don't think LeBron, with all the money that he has, probably would have gone to a sports psychologist.
Right. Although I think that LeBron choker thing is pushing it up, but that's LeBron style. Like, yeah, you know, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
But it's like,
I agree with you.
You don't think someone with like LeBron's level of money or the teams that he was on that like famously choked, like they would have seen someone. They got more money than like any combination of esports teams you could make.
I mean, that's
why would they not spend that money to like win an NBA championship?
Exactly. I mean, Thorin says in his tweet, the premise that having a sports psych, often literally any of them, and without knowing their background at all, at a Ficus team, is so ignorant. Do you imagine infamous choker athletes making $20 million a year and their teams are somehow unaware of this magical field? Like, it's. I agree. Don't get me wrong. I think there's more depth to it than just hiring a psychologist. I'm with you there completely. And the surname is Stelberg. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but Mia Stelberg, okay? But I also think, like, it's not just about the psychology thing either. It's about, like, mentality and having leaders as well. Because if you look in the last recent years, if you look at Kuroki with Liquid, it's also a similar thing. I don't know if they have a psychologist or this shit or that shit. But the way he kept his team in check, TI7, being that big leader figure, making sure they don't think about winning and think about this. They just focus on the task at hand. I think it's very important. Again, before OG had the Mia working with them, I mean, Seb, his role as a coach, the way he kept his team together in just a motivational aspect, on a personal aspect, I think is really important. I don't know if a team like EG has that. You have Bulba, who I think is a great Dota mind as their coach, but I think you also, I think, I don't know if they have that person who's like that strong leader.
Motivation,
that
yeah.
can keep them right. together, like can push them in the game, the likes of a Kuroki. I don't know if they have that strong person in the coaching role that can keep them personally up. I know their manager Phil seems to be a really good guy like that, but I think they could do with a Kuroki, you know? I think we don't know how good that team could be with a Kuroki figure or a psychologist or something where you address the mental aspect as well, you know? I don't think there's any one-stop solutions, don't get me wrong. Especially like, I also come from a sports background and I know how fucking tough it is. I really do. I would never be able to do what these guys can do. But also, I do think it's something that should be taken seriously.
Also, I think one of the complications is that when it comes to psychology, one of the difficult things you have to bear in mind, which is true for psychology, but doesn't necessarily, is not nice to hear within the context of esports, actually any competitive environment, is that sometimes fixing psychological problems as mental blocks can take years.
Yeah. No, I mean,
like, Like, yeah, and it's like, there's no, like you're saying, Prof, there's no catch-all solution that fits every scenario in terms of the psychology. Because
otherwise, like, everybody would be doing it.
Yeah. Exactly. You, no one knows how to do it. No one even knows that there's a guarantee of results. You don't know yourself when engaging, when you need to see a sports psychologist, you're like, listen, we need help to be able to win this particular tournament. It's actually an open question whether or not you're, at the end of the day, able to do it, right? And there's so many variables that are up in the air that in some senses I think it can often be more torturous to think about, okay guys, we've actually fucked up the mental aspect of this. What have we been doing wrong? How are we thinking about this in the wrong way? We should be hiring the psychologist. Okay, maybe they're not the right fit. Get somebody else. Maybe they're not the right fit. Like, you obviously should be doing that, but you should be doing it as a supplement towards helping your team, not as a answer to all the problems of your team. Like, guys, as somebody who has been to therapy, right, let me tell you, if you think therapy is going to solve your problems by itself, you're fucking deluded, and it's going to actually fuck with you. It's a bad thing.
Dude, it's like going to gym once a week and thinking that, like, you're going to be, like, ripped in 5 months. Yeah. Like, no, Holmes. You need a whole lot of work with a whole different other kinds of things to work it out. It helps. I'm not saying that psychology doesn't help. Like, I've been through it myself, and I can say it is, they are necessary. It will help.
Tremendous difference.
But it's not one thing going to fix everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my biggest point in this is I agree with both of you guys what you're saying, right? I agree on the psychological part, especially because I've also been through the similar process. But I think my point is that I think, as a whole, I think the psychological aspect, not necessarily having a psychologist, but having these leader figures and stuff, is quite important. Also,
but I mean,
I'll put
that,
a caveat
that
there.
That is part of sports psychology. You can't, right. Like, you're never going to succeed in a team environment without a good captain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, I'll put a caveat that it's not easy to be the way Puppy or Kuroki or Seb and stuff is. I think that itself is a lot of personality thing and takes probably a tremendous amount of work and confidence and shit. I think it's so tough. So it's not like a one-stop solution. I can't say, like, Fly is a bad captain now. I think he's probably a great captain, but it's still, like, the level that you need to be at is... I don't think it's an easy, like, yes, no, right, wrong sort of thing. I think it's just... I think it's another aspect that needs to start getting looked at a bit more.
Like, think about it this way, right? Would you say that Puppy is a better captain than No-Tail?
It's like, I don't know how to, I can't actually respond to that. I've never played under these guys. I see what they do in
but,
the games.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, if you look at their consistent history of success with teams, would you say that Puppy is a better captain than No-Tail?
I would have to say yes, as especially as, like, in terms of play style, like the way, the innovation from Puppy, the way he plays, the level of consistency and success he's had with so many different rosters, I would have to say him. But, like, again, looking at No-Tail Office's
team.
But
what I'm saying is this. So, like, I'm not looking them, looking at them as players, right?
Right.
So if Puppy is a better captain than No-Tail, how come Puppy hasn't made a TI since TI3 when he wasn't the captain of the team? Or that was his first year as captain?
Yeah. It's so,
like, even pressure cooker environments can get to captains.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that they're automatically going to be, you know, like, a captain will make you automatically better. Like, I think most people would say that Puppy is probably a better captain than No-Tail, but No-Tail is more effective in that environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's also a thing about when it comes to the psychology of this, right? All the different ways this plays together is that you also need to be able to assess the various strengths of the players psychologically, not just in terms of the game, but, like, when, in what kind of situations outside of the game can we maximize your success? What do you need in those situations? What do you need in those contexts? And it's really, really complicated because the captain themselves don't know how they're going to feel on a particular day. They don't know how they're going to feel after a given loss. You have to try... Just imagine this role of a captain having to manage the psychological states of four other people around you when you are 100% uncertain as to what your next psychological state might be. It's like, it requires an unreal amount of mental fortitude to be successful at this particular thing.
Yeah.
Like,
and
in a consistent fashion.
And some players will just have it. Other players don't. It's, you know, like, you want to look at a player with cast iron mentality? Sumail. I think Sumail is probably... Like, he might not have the same level of skill as Arteezy, but if I have to have a game to you know, what, look, one game to save the entire world. I'm banking on Samel more than I'll bank on Arteezy.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Because that kid has the mentality to do it. Arteezy doesn't. For whatever reason, we don't know. Pointless speculating, but Samel has shown consistently to have a better mentality for those incredibly hectic environments that TI produces.
Yeah. I mean, I think as one of the Western players, everybody asks, like, even same thing as the Chinese teams. They asked him, how is he so good at TI every year so consistently? He says he just plays the same as normal. Everybody else is just not as good. Like, you know how Samel talks. He's very frank. He's like, everybody else plays shit. I'm just playing my normal Dota.
That is the most invaluable thing. Is you don't even need a player to be better in that environment, you know, like to go up. Just stay the same.
Yeah.
If you can stay the same in a group stage game at an unimportant tournament as the grand final of TI, you're already better than about 90% of humanity.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's probably more than 90%. Like, me and Snare were joking about it the other day. Like, we talk about the psychological thing, the pressure, the choking, the this. I mean, we just... I play tennis, friends and family and shit, and I'm serving on, like, break point or match point, and I'm double faulting, right? I'm choking on things that actually have no difference to my life. It makes nothing. Like, just fucking playing for fun, and yet I'm choking, I'm getting nervous and shit. So, playing at TI with the fucking... Everything is on the line, the biggest tournament of year, your hopes, your dreams, your fucking salary, your... Maybe you're set up for your potential next year in your future, your legacy. I can't even imagine what it's like. Mm. Right. All right. So,
and it must also be said, the fact that a player chokes doesn't make them any less of a human being.
Yeah.
No, for sure.
It doesn't mean that they're worse. It just means that pressure gets to them more than it does to other people. And that's it.
Yeah. It's fair. I think we did a good job of that today, and we looked at, like, more aspects of it. I think, like, last year, I wouldn't say LGD choked. This year, you could say he choked, but again, it's, like, other factors coming into play for these different teams, for these different people. But now, I think that's not all the talk that went on about esports psychologists, right? Today, there was also, I don't know if I'm going to call it a big scandal, but it was a thing that happened, right? Mia Stahlberg had a photo posted on her Reddit. It was just titled... OG, let me see if I can find the exact title of the post of the post. Going to Reddit.
I literally just said OG psychologist semicolon Mia Stahlberg.
Yeah, and that was just a photo of her there. Yeah. Like, it's a super badass photo, and she's just standing. That's all the photo was titled. Got 2,000, 3,000 upvotes or whatever, right? And Scant tweeted that he thinks. Okay, so I'm just gonna quote his tweet. He was like, "Was excited to see a front page Reddit thread about Mia Stahlberg. Then I opened it and realized the entire post is just a photo of her. There's so much to be said and so much that has already been said about and related to a sad reminder of where the community is at." Now, let me just give some more context here. There's been a split reaction to this, the likes of Belvedere, Dota, and shit, super upset about Scant. Other people are saying, like, he's, again, being, like, edgy, SJW. But other people are saying this is really sexist, but they're not saying that the post is... Well, Scant is trying to say the post itself, just the premise of it is sexist. They're saying, look at the comments, the disgusting things are said, this, that. Like, I mean, Noxel puts a stat, the stats man. He's like, 20% of the comments, they were talking about her body, her looks, or this, or aren't you sleeping with her, all that kind of stuff. So, again, the Dota community as a large whole being sexist, I mean, know that's common knowledge, and I fucking agree
just,
with
it. It's just esports, bro.
Yeah,
it's a sad state of affairs if that is the thing. But it's like, yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. To me personally, like, I don't see what Scant is reading into that. It's just a picture of a person. Like, yeah, maybe the person is intending to, you know, point out that she's pretty or whatever it is. But it's like, you don't know those intentions, so why are you automatically going to that as your right. default thought?
I think okay, Snare, you can go first.
I was gonna say that for me, why I'm also like, what the hell is this, right? Is because given how much conversation, my thing is just that, like, to what end is this, right? You post the picture, it's like chilled, but it's not like, it's not a meme picture. It's not like, oh, congratulations to her. It's just a picture, right? So it's just like, basically, my question is this, right? Well, one of the ways to pump the intuition is that if it was OG psychologist Mark Stahlberg, right? What are the odds that it just gets a picture post and nothing else? No explanation, no context, no discussion, just this here picture. And whatever else happens, happens. And obviously, we don't know the, what happens in this counterfactual world 100%. But I feel if like, hell, even if Mia Stahlberg wasn't as attractive as she is, right, I'm not entirely certain that we just get this post with just a picture, nothing else, no explanation, no context, no discussion, especially in the context where we spent all week having a vociferous and very, you know, very conflict-laden discussions about the role of sports psychologists. It's like, is this really all that came to mind when you had to discuss this? Again, like, I mean, we don't know who the person is that posted this thing, but it's like, I don't know. It's just one of those things where,
like, for me, that's just like, it's so sketchy to like, oh, this is the reason exactly why it was posted.
No, no, I'm not saying this, right? I don't think it's like just the reason, right? But what I'm saying is that, like, I can't fully imagine, right, a world in which an ugly mob, if a cyborg Matt as a secret psychologist who would want TI, right, I can't imagine just a picture of Matt chilling by himself with nothing else. Like, if there was, let's put it this way, right, if there was just one line under this picture saying, yo, I don't know, choked that Astralis, did well here, or was doing well here, she's the reason they won. Well, it could be, hell, even if they were flaming her, saying that she did fucking nothing and this was all Seb, whatever the case may be, one line of text would have made this dramatically different. But the fact that the only context of us engaging with this person right now is just a picture, nothing else, it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, we just happened, if this wasn't the Dota community, right, I might not have had this particular consideration. But I know my homies, I know my community a bit. I'm like, what are the odds that it wasn't? It's basically how I feel about it.
I think somebody retweeted, Scant, her name is Victoria Rose, freelance writer, I believe, for, I don't know, freelance writer, right? She's tweeted, I don't know if she's a very popular person or if she got a tick on Twitter, got the blue tick, not that that means much, but yeah, this is her opinion. This is the important thing, what she actually has to say. I don't think people get the point here. She's retweeting Scant's initial post. I agree that this wasn't malicious, but sometimes we do a lot of stupid little things that end up not looking that great. On all my years of R Dota 2, I've rarely seen a quote-unquote congratulatory post like that with minimal description get traction. Usually yeah. There's even a little bit that says congrats on such a successful yada yada or this person deserves more attention, but that barely applies on this subreddit because 99% of the time it's just a text or post. Even for other women, Moxie or other casters. To reiterate, I don't doubt that OP had bad intentions, but the way this was presented feels like it was attuned towards a gaze, not an accomplishment, and that it took literally Astralis / CSGO fans to come in and lift up her achievements. It's just something to think about. Do you remember that Kiev? Okay, I don't know what she's talking about, the Kiev major video with the woman. I don't remember. But I think the way Victoria phrases it is quite a nice way. Just to, like, I think just think about the biases that at play if there is or there isn't. Like, I also don't think, if I looked at it, I don't think it's a malicious post. I also thought when I saw the post, it was going to be the YouTube clip of her getting interviewed, the 3-minute one, because I thought that was a very good interview and quite informative, but it was ended up just being a picture. I thought the picture was pretty badass, but then again, like, I'm also looking at it as, like, a guy, and she's, like, a pretty girl in a photo that's really nice, so it's, like, am I really okay. The best person to judge whether it's,
All perfectly valid points. Here's another question. Why is it on the subreddit? Why is it on the subreddit? What, like, why have the mods not deleted it then?
I mean, I don't know if Dota subreddit has fucking mods, to be honest with you. Like,
you can't have a subreddit on Reddit without having mods. It gets deleted. So, like, sure. But, like, you know, perfectly valid point. It is quite likely that the person posted it for nothing but, you know, eye candy value. But, like, it shouldn't even be allowed on the subreddit then. So,
I mean, like, but that speaks to the larger issue of the community, right?
I mean,
with the mod is some dude being like, yo, she fire, actually, let me chill, you know?
Yeah.
This might have nothing to do with anything, but it's okay, it's cool, boys, it's fine.
I mean, every subreddit has the whole thing of, like, must be relevant to the argument, you know, like, must be relevant to the subreddit.
Yeah, but...
So what is literally posting a picture of a person with nothing? Why is that allowed on the subreddit in the first place?
I mean, but then again, you can't let your fucking, Reddit mods be, like, a judge of, like, morals in the community.
I'm not arguing the morals of it, dude. Right? I'm asking, is that relevant? You're not posting anything other than a picture of a woman and saying, this is the coach of X team. Like, what relevancy does that have to Dota?
Yeah, none at all. Just like, but this is kind of the point that you were mentioning earlier, right? Where it's just like, this kind of shit is just so replete in esports that it's like, oh, well, of course this is fine. What's the issue, right? For the vast majority, let's be serious, guys. I wouldn't say, let me not say vast, let me be a bit careful. Let us just say a definite majority, right, of Dota 2 fans and esports fans in general, or players, whatever, would look at this and legitimately not even understand why there would be an issue. It's like, what's up? Right. Why is this a problem at all, guys? So that, obviously, from that pool of human beings that form the Dota community, the mods of the subreddit have to come from that pool of players in some fashion. If we already know that the majority of people aren't going to find an issue because, you know, for various reasons, we have a pretty sexist community, then it's not unlikely and it makes perfect sense why the mods would just be like, what's the problem? Like, how? I could even imagine a mod saying, listen, guys, no, this has nothing to do with her being a woman, right? This is just people wanting to see the behind-the-scenes people that allow success to be formulated by the teams that are playing Dota. Don't you want to know, like, the kinds of people behind your favorite players, bro? What's up with you? Are you trying to pretend that your players are just doing this by themselves, that they don't have help, that they don't have a psychologist, they don't have a manager? You don't want to see any of these people? You know, they'll neatly ignore that we never actually do fucking see a lot of the managers and coaches, etc., unless they being interviewed at particular places, but no one's making posts about them like this.
Yeah, they get buried on memes.
And it's just like, what? Like, why? If you just post it again, if I post a picture of Sachka just by himself, people are like, what the fuck are you doing, dude? There's nothing to do with anything.
Hey, he's a fairly good looking guy. I'm just going to put that out there, you know?
No one's noticed as good looking as Seth.
Like, what I'm saying is, it's just like, I can fully understand that it is, you know, like, there is probably a likelihood of it being for that reason. But to just automatically assume that, it's just like, okay, let's be like less ridiculous. And then secondly, why the fuck is it on the subreddit? Like, that has nothing to do with anything. Like, I don't care that she's the coach of OG, or sorry, the sports psychologist for OG. If she's a sports psychologist for OG, have something relevant in that thread posted by the OP that is relevant to what he's talking about. Like, just post a bit, like, who gives a shit?
Right.
Honestly, and like, who gives a shit? Like, it's not relevant to anything on that thread.
And, like, in this regard, when I saw that picture, I was like, and when scans tweet, I was like, but I saw a lot of photos of just, like, random photos of Topson that are really nice photos. So I thought maybe it's a similar thing. But, like, even the Topson photos, like, the one where he's doing that fucking pose where he's pointing that epic one, it's like, this pic of Topson is awesome. They could even just put, like, I don't know. It's like, It's just like, I think maybe it was just an accident, maybe it wasn't, but I think it is something to think about, as Victoria said. That's where I stand.
Yeah, it's like where I'm really in agreement with her, right, is this would be so much, this would just be so much easier if there was one line of text.
Yeah.
One.
That's what I'm saying. It's just like, it's just a picture. It's like, why is it allowed on the subreddit?
Yeah. This makes no sense.
By Reddit, like, by that subreddit's own rules, it has to be relevant. Like, just posting a picture of a human being, it's just like, there's no point to this. Why is it on here?
Yeah. Somebody literally just chilling, just like out here doing their thing. Nothing else. It's like, yeah, definitely. We are in full agreement, gentlemen. On this one, it's one of those things as well where it's like, I don't even understand. It's one thing to not be able to understand how this is an issue, right? But I can't understand why, if after people say to you, listen, this is the issue, this is the problem, why is it the case that so many people are, like, legitimately upset at even the idea that it could be sexist, right? Or the idea that it's not relevant. Or the idea that, yo, you wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't a pretty woman or whatever. And there's so much of the community that's, like, legitimately upset at this notion. It's like, fuck you guys. Don't even bring this up. I don't want to have to think about it. And it's like, listen, guys, we can disagree about something, right? But at least acknowledge the validity of a different position first. Then we can say, all right, this is why I don't think this position is valid. don't from the jump be like,
it's 2019, it's not there is no alternate position other than the one that you hold.
I was about to say that's like a solution to life's problems. This there, I agree with the sentiment completely, but yeah.
Let me give you guys a small tangent actually on this thing. So there was a book I had to do an index for recently that I've been talking to Kamil about. And in the book itself, the guy has a chapter about communication, right? In particular in online spaces. And I was so annoyed after reading this chapter because the argument made so much sense about how you kind of have to, especially when dealing, when you've removed all the aspects that allow you to empathetically and innately relate to another human being, you know, no body language, no eye contact, no sound, whatever. And you're just stuck with... you're just stuck with abstraction and meaning, right, and nothing else. You kind of actually have to treat people as civilly as possible and try to have to be at least understanding of their point of view, even if you don't actually take it into account yourself. And
I mean, that's the basis for any conversation, is to at least accept that somebody could hold a different position to your own.
Yeah. And, like, after I read this chapter, I was really annoyed, right, because I was like, shit, my shitposting career is finished now. And since then, like today, I found myself having to mediate a conversation instead of, I wasn't an active part. I was just like, I'm asking questions. Cool. I disagree with you, but I get what you think. Someone else. Then when people are talking shit, like, yo, guys, relax. Let's just hear them out. I think they're full of shit too, but let's just hear it out. It's pretty garbage, guys. Like, we have to be better about this. You know, being a better person is awful, but it has to be done.
All right. So on the topic of communications, here's our next topic. This is our last topic of the evening. I think it's the spiciest thing that happened today, but I also think it's the dumbest fucking thing, right? Russian talents... okay, this is a Reddit post. This is where I discovered about this thing. Russian talents are discrediting OG, stating that they were taking Adderall during their TI run. This guy puts a Twitch clip of Azar talking about OG taking fucking Adderall at the tournament, and they brought in a psychologist so they can get Adderall and this kind of shit. This is what was posted. Obviously, the guy who made the Reddit post was initially quite touched. The community's reaction was strong. We saw Nahas coming out as a person who's had to take ADHD medication before, saying its effects. Kip's complexities coach said same thing. She's taken the stuff and she knows for her medical conditions that she knows it doesn't work like that, where you can just take it to fucking performance enhance and shit. Then, of course, JJ, the OBS guy, Pimp Mikkel, he made a post like, what the fuck is this? He said, she said, bullshit. If you have proof of pros using drugs, give it to Valve. If you don't, shut the fuck up. He has a couple of more things saying similar sentiment and stuff.
All I'm going to say on this whole thing is the Cloud9 Counter-Strike team famously took Adderall, as many teams were rumored to be doing back in the day. They went out last place in a tournament. There is absolutely... no evidence that Adderall positively affects performance or negatively affects performance of an esports player at this point. So, like, that just sounds like mad salt from the Russian casters. Like, who even gives a shit, mate?
Yeah.
Like, so until they can prove that it is actually a problem, like, what are you going to do about it? Like, if they have it legitimately, because that is, I mean, you think it's hard to get an Adderall prescription in America. There's stories about people like half the players.
It's a Schedule 2 drug. That's like the same as Oxy. Hard. Oh, okay, it's not hard. I was going to make the opposite argument, but
it's not that hard to get it. Like, so long as you get a doctor's prescription, but there's dozens of stories over the years of players just going to a doctor and asking for that prescription and, like, you know, basically getting the writ for it, like, without really any problems.
Yeah, dude.
Right.
But, like,
the one time I was on Adderall,
until somebody can show me in black and white that it positively affects a player's performance, or in fact affects a player's performance in any way, right? I can't believe that, because I've seen a team that I know is on Adderall and they were useless. they literally talked like they're on cocaine in that game, like screaming at each other, like super fast talking, terrible communication. Like that team like thought that was going to be useful to them. Definitely wasn't.
Well, I was just going to say that, like, if you know that a team is taking Adderall, or someone knows that it's actually a performance enhancer, you know, that just sounds like you're saving strats for TI, dude.
I mean, you can, like, play with tiny boys. The thing is just like, give me proof.
Yeah.
Well, I think, like, I completely agree with your statement that this is like all bullshit thing, because One, like you say, it's inconclusive whether it negatively or positively impacts your performance. Two, and this is a point Knoxville always brings up, and I fucking love him for it, says, is there even a fucking rule about this for Dota 2 events? Nobody said anything. We don't have a fucking Valve opinion on it. So is it even illegal? So why are you bringing it up? And three, this is Vlad, the guy who hosted the podcast, obviously Vlad, the fucking Russian legend, says, oh, come on, guys. He was just discussing the possibility with a friend on stream. It's out of context and a bad translation. Just forget about it. Usually in-stream talks about how the fuck is that possible? Nothing serious. Knoxville, again, did like agree with Vlad because I guess it's Vlad. So one, it's somebody reading it to somebody, something says on like a stream. I mean, we say Fortnite is shit the whole time on this podcast, but we're just joking, right? We can't conclusively say it. So, and I'm not Russian, so I don't know what.
I'm not part of the podcast, so I can conclusively say Fortnite is shit, but continue.
All right. Shout out to you, Snare. Shout out to you, fucking big, big player. So on three fronts, it's like, does it have an impact? We don't fucking know. Is it allowed? We don't fucking know. Did he really mean that? Also, you have to reach to say yes. So it's a completely fucking irrelevant thing. But you know what? TI is over. We've got to look for drama somewhere and do it, all right?
Yep. Look, also at the same time, I feel like this sounds like salt about, like, if it was directly him meaning that, that's just salt. But also sounds like the salty about not being able to get the connect. Being like, shit, man, we were trying all week to try to get ourselves some Adderall, but we fucked up. It's like, how the fuck did you get through the Chinese censure? What the fuck, man?
Yep. Yeah, sneaking fucking Adderall into China, that sounds like a fun experience.
I feel like
no consequences there.
Sneaking an Adderall into China, right, is a more likely scenario than fluking TI twice.
Oof. Oof. All right, I like it. So, we're nearing the end of this podcast. We've been talking for a shit long time about this TI thing. I just have two things left. Last week, my fucking poll got forgotten to go up on Esports Central, so I'm going to say it again, okay? No bias here, of course, in this poll. The poll is the greatest event in esports. The options are as follows. The International Dota 2 Tournament, the LoL World Championships, ESR 1 Cologne, and Overwatch League Playoffs. That's your four options, and again, I said this last week, if you think Fortnite should be in there, fuck you, it's not even a real esport. Kappa, maybe no Kappa, I'm not sure. Right? And I don't know, again, last week I said ESL 1 Cologne for good reason. The ESL, I mean, Prof, you the more than the CSGO guy, so you can elaborate on this, but CSGO Major is not run by the same people every year. It's just randomly thrown together. Yes, it's the biggest, quote-unquote, biggest event in CSGO, but it's not... I mean, last year it's basically the same as
the Dota 2 majors. Right. So, yeah. Like Epicenter. Okay, so Epicenter hasn't had a CS:GO major as yet, but StarLadder's major is currently on right now. FaceIt has had a major. ESL's had a bunch of majors. DreamHack has had majors. E-League's had majors. So, like, they basically just pass it around. There's two every year, and it generally gets shifted between tournament organizers every year.
Right. So. Again, I think it's not the same event every year. That's why I don't include the ESL, the major.
Most people consider ESL 1 Cologne to be the high point of the CS year, higher than even the majors, basically.
Right. And I agree with that. I haven't watched, obviously, I'm not a big Counter-Strike guy or whatever, but tuning into the ESL 1 Cologne broadcast, like, the event, the event itself, the production, the way they do the talent, the way they hype up the teams, the amount of people they have there, I would say, production-wise, is maybe the best esport event, better than TI, right? So it's a very impressive event. They call it the Cathedral of Counter-Strike, but it's for me, I'm happy with that. For Counter-Strike. But yeah, that's the poll. And then last thing I want to say, I should have brought this up an hour ago, but in Korea, there's a term called Royal Road, and that's the guy who wins the major.
Royal Roader. So just a bit of context for anybody that doesn't understand the term. It was used in Korean esports for any player that debuted and in that same season won the major tournament that he played in. So it would be the OSL and the MSL back in the day for StarCraft, where it originated in League of Legends. It's if you if you get into the league and the same season you win the league. And obviously in Dota it was used in the final. But you can continue now.
Right. So in Dota, we had a Royal Roader in the form of Sumail. First TI ever he played, he won it. 15 years old. Now we had a guy, my boy Godson or Dogson or Topson or whatever you want to call him, the evolution of how I viewed the man, Royal roaded twice. He won TI on his first try, and then he back-to-backed it and won it again. Like, it's fucking insane.
Do you want to hear some insane stats? Actually, check this out, guys. So I was thinking about, I was talking to someone about this the other day, right? So hear this out, check this out, guys. OG as a team, right? Just as like an OG brand, has been to 4 TIs and has won 2. 50% win rate at TI, right?
Right.
No Tail has been to 7 TIs and has won 2, right? Rounded up to 30% win rate at TI. G-Rex and Seb, between the both of them, also have been to 4 TIs apiece, 50% win rate. Anna's been to 3 TIs, won 2. And like you mentioned, Thompson, not only does Thompson have 100% win rate with a TI, right? He, if you start, because of this year, like the dates of the TIs, he did it basically within the same year. Within the same 365 days, man won 2 TIs. Good times.
Feels good, man. So, thank you everybody for joining into the show. It was a Dota special, so all fans of other esports, I apologize that you had to listen to us talk about Dota the whole time. I'm not really sorry because I had the fucking time of my life if you didn't notice. But yeah, that was episode number 57 of the Esports Central podcast. Next week, you can catch us again every Thursday for episode number 51, for a new episode of the podcast. Next week is episode number 58, coming out on the 3rd of September. I actually got the date this time. I hope you all are impressed. And of course, you can catch us on Twitter. You can catch me at KChickDay. You can catch GK at G_KAYY. Nadia at STGutterLily. Prophecy at Prophecy, just with, instead of the normal spelling, with the CI. And of course, Mr. Snare, what's your at, sir?
@snare_snare_. I need to change that shit, honestly.
Did you? You changed it from the previous one?
No. That's not
disappointment.
And the previous one was amazing, wasn't it?
It was amazing.
I don't remember it, but...
you go, Thomas, bro. That's still my tag, but it's not my...
And also, don't forget... to follow us on the World Wide Web at Esports Central. You can keep up with all the good news. Esportscentral.co.za. All local Isleka news comes through there. You can follow us on Twitter at EsportsCNTRL. And of course, at Facebook, Esports Central CD. Thank you everybody for listening and goodbye.